is technically a corn whiskey. It's 100% corn. And it's a white whiskey. Moonshine is a white whiskey. Some larger distilleries now, like Maker's Mark, for example, and we like Maker's, they have started to release their white whiskey, which is what they have before they put it into a barrel. So you can buy it on site at their distillery. And we thought, you know, if they're doing that, and then you've got these other, you know, moonshines out on the market now, we believe ours is better. But, you know, that's personal preference. But we thought, you know, that would be a good way to get into the marketplace. One of the reasons to do a unaged product is you don't have to wait for the barrel to mature or age the product. So if we started out directly with a bourbon or a aged whiskey, then we'd be starting now, but we wouldn't have a product until next fall at earliest.
Do you have any indication as how this will go over? Is this going to be a novelty?
It is a niche product, but it is, according to our distributors and other industry professionals that we've talked to, it's on fire. People are loving the moonshine.
Well, what proof is white whiskey?
Well, for us, it's 100 proof. We're doing it a little stronger than most.
Which is 50% alcohol.
Yes. Most will come out of the market or, you know, go on the shelves at about 80 proof, as with your whiskeys. There's more and more whiskeys being released now that are higher proof. But under the law, you can't go, I think it's above, you can't put it into a barrel above 125, I think is what it is.
Compare that to illegal moonshine. My understanding was it was close to 200 proof.
Well, it depends on how they make it and when they bottle it. Some guys, like if you watch the show Moonshiners, he starts taking it off as it runs off the still and putting it directly into milk jugs. Well, depending on how much heat he's got underneath it and where it is in that run, the first jugs could be, you know, 150, 160 proof, maybe even higher. And toward the end, it'll start getting weaker and weaker. Back in the day, during Prohibition, then after Prohibition, in East Tennessee, the reason you called it proof was if it was proofed, it would mean it was at least 100 proof, at least. So it would catch fire if you lit it. You know, take the spoon, put it in there, and then light it. That was proofing it to show their customer that, yeah, this is strong stuff. But it's marketing, and marketing is huge in the whiskey business, legal or illegal. So those guys that do the bootleg stuff are... they're just as good marketers as, you know, as your Jack Daniels and Jim Beams.
Give us a little bit of a brief history of how far back moonshining goes in your family.
My first relative in the U.S. came in about 1630. His name was Jesse Burnett, and the Burnetts have always had stills. Back before Prohibition, it wasn't illegal to have a still, and it was a means of survival. If you're growing corn, and you know, my family came in and went almost directly over to the Appalachian Mountains. If you're, you know, growing corn, grain, whatever, you know, in the hills, it's much easier to carry to market if you take your corn and you distill it down and take it in. It weighed less, it was easier to handle, and you get more price, you know, more money for it. So my family would have small little farm plots in the mountains, distill their grain, you know, mash it, distill it, take it to market and sell it. So that's been going on for a couple hundred years, at least. Illegal moonshine is still hot in East Tennessee. Almost everyone I know, even the most church, God-fearing people, have a bottle of moonshine somewhere. They get it from their guy, whoever that may be.
What about the contrast between the taste of legal or illegal moonshine? Do you think there's people who drink illegal moonshine would buy it legally, thinking maybe it may not be as good?
I think it'll be opposite. I think the legal moonshine will be better than what you'd get most of the time illegally. And the reason for that is a lot of people who make it illegally, they just do what they've been taught or what they figured out. It's hard to get a lot of, like, industrial support when you're running a backwoods still. You only know what you know and the guys that you happen to know. For us, I've been able to go and I've talked to scientists. I've talked to PhDs in chemistry and in physics and biologists and guys that helped me pick out what yeast I was going to use, the process. How much corn should we really use in a batch, you know, to get the most bang for the buck, that sort of thing. When you're just making it illegally, you just you go find whatever corn you can. You find whatever yeast you can, which probably will happen to be bread yeast, which is not the best for alcohol. We're trying to introduce, you know, a modern moonshine that people will actually enjoy and actually want to buy.
Just take me through the process to make the white whiskey.
So we've ground a bunch of corn. We have about 5,000-6,000 pounds of corn in this thing here, and we've made a mess here. But basically, all we're doing is we're taking the corn out and we're putting in bags so we can effectively store it without having to worry about mice and all that sort of thing. But we take our corn, which we do grow on site. We have about 30 acres down in the bottom field. That's, you know, all our corn. pardon me, I'm sorry. So, you know, obviously we cut it, harvest it, put it in our grain bin. That's also on site. And then we grind it, bring it over here, put it in bags. And then when we're ready, we put about 50 pounds in each bag. Then we're ready to mash it. We will take the corn, add it to our water, and then cook it. First off, with corn, you have to cook it. So we have to bring it up to boiling for about an hour. And our yeast, we do get it from California. It's American-made. I couldn't find a Missouri yeast provider or manufacturer. Maybe one will pop up in the next year or so. We try to do everything we can local if we can do it. But then we pitch the yeast, and what the yeast does is, well, the enzyme liquefies the starch out of the corn. Then the yeast, that starch, the enzyme also converts it over to sugar. Mm-hmm. And what you want is a lot of sugar. So the yeast comes in, it eats that sugar, produces alcohol and carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. So we'll let it sit for about 5 days. And then once it is done, you know, there's primary fermentation. We sit through the primary fermentation, which is where it's bubbling really, really good. So then once it's fermented, we move it over. Now, our system is kind of strange. Most of your big companies will have one huge mash vat, hold thousands of gallons, and they'll have a big still that'll hold, you know, hundreds if not thousands of gallons. Some of them are continuously run still, so they just dump their stuff in all the time. And we're nowhere near that. We are a true one-batch-at-a-time system. But we take our 200 gallons of water, or mash at that point. It's called beer. Mm-hmm. And when it's done, it'll smell like beer. And if you drink it, you're like, oh, it doesn't taste like beer because there's no hops in it. We didn't add any of that. But we'll take it 30 gallons at a time and put it into one of our 30-gallon stills. And then we'll run both of those, and we'll end up running them several times for that first, what's called a beer stripping run. We're taking just all the alcohol and flavor and dumping it into one of our drums. After we've taken all that stuff out, we'll take the barrels over and clean them, get them ready for the next batch. Then we'll take that batch that we had of the alcohol, and we'll put it back into our stills. And then we'll do what we call a proofing run. We'll run it really slowly. It'll pull all the alcohol out and then the amount of flavor that we need to get just our final product. Once that is done, then we will, you know, we put it back into a drum, and then we do our, you know, what's mandated by the Tobacco Tax Bureau, which is, you know, basically our tax entity. We'll do our production gauge. So we'll check what the proof is, how much we have. We'll do that by weight. And then we'll get ready to bottle it. So we have our pallet of boxes of bottles made in Missouri, down in Park Hill, Missouri. We'll bottle it through a little bottle machine. It'll suck it right out of the barrel for us. Put it in bottles. We'll hand apply the labels, put the our bottle toppers on, labels on, put them back into the same box they came in, slap one of our labels on it, and then get it ready to ship out to our distributor. Most of our, like, our labels are made in St. Louis, St. Louis Lithograph. Bottles are made by Pyramel Glass in Park Hill, Missouri. Our mashers came from Doniphan, Missouri. Our corn comes from on-site. Yeah, yeast comes from California, but I'm working on that. Bags came from the grain store up the road, Strotman's Feed. So we try to get everything that we can as local as we can. Our tables and chairs came from St. Charles County's, St. Charles City's last auction. Bought a bunch of that stuff from the city auction.
How long does it take from the very first start to making it to getting it in a bottle?
In theory, it'll take 9 days from the time we put it in, you know, put the corn into our masher to start. I'm hoping to try to cut that down a little bit, but you only can, you know, cut time off, you know, certain spots. So I'm thinking it's going to end up being 9 days per batch. I've got a really good team. My dad did, he worked for MNMRs for 30 years, doing safety, EPA, environmental, plant management. When it comes to, you know, corporate manufacturing, he's a wealth of knowledge. Cole over there is a federal law enforcement officer, but he's also a fabricator. He can make just about anything, and he's got a really good eye for it. Matt has an, as strange as he looks, he's got an MBA. He's got a good business head on him, and he's a strong back, and he loves doing this. So he helps me day-to-day a lot around here. But he's also going to be our sales manager. He's going to be going out and selling to bars and restaurants and helping manage the distributor and that sort of thing. My wife, Elise, has a master's in marketing, computer design, or I'll have to ask her exactly what it is, but it's design and marketing. And that's her master's degree, and she's got a photography and education degree for her bachelor's. I myself, I have a law degree, a master's in nonprofit administration, and political science, however that helps. You know, my dad's also got an MBA. We've got an engineer on a board. We've got an aircraft mechanic, and then also another guy is a machinist who worked for Boeing for about 30 years. So we have a lot of fabrication, sales, and business experience on the board. So it makes my job a lot easier because I can go to, you know, Michael. Hey, Michael, I need this. Can you make this? And he'll go, oh, yeah. He'll get it to you by Tuesday. All right. And I didn't have to go out and pay someone. So we've saved a lot of money that way. Elise did all of our branding and logo design. Our logo, the buffalo, was one of her mom's necklaces. Her mom was, their mom was a advocate for Native American rights. And so we have, you know, pottery all over the house, all kinds of Native American stuff from her. And that's where we got the name for the company. She loved buffalo. We love buffalo too, but she thought she would have loved it. So when they came up with this, they're like, you know, like I think Cole said, a mom would be mad if we didn't have a buffalo in the name. Yeah. So it became Mad Buffalo.
Okay, I'm tasting it now. That is pretty good.
You notice it's a little sweeter. I don't know if you had any other moonshines on the market. It's a little bit sweeter.